Downloading 98%. 99%. Download complete. The episode will begin in
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk, the technology show for blind and partially sighted people. Your hosts this week are...
Hi, I'm Stephen Scott.
I'm Sean Preece.
And I'm Tim Schwartz.
Hey! I don't know why every time we do the show I end up laughing like a maniac, but...
Because you're a maniac.
Because I am a maniac, yes. Hello, yes, I am Stephen Scott, the brave heart of the three of us. Along with us, we have our very own James Brown. Yes, he's living in America. It's Tim Schwartz.
I'm not quite sure what to think about that, but hello, Stephen. Hello, Sean.
And we also have our very own Wurzel Gummidge himself. It's our own Sean Preece. How are you, Sean?
I'm good, thank you, Stephen. I was wondering where you were going to go with that, and I'm happy. I like Wurzel Gummidge. Thank you very much.
It worked better in my head when I said it out loud, but never mind. Anyway, yes, hello, welcome along to the programme. It is the technology show, believe it or not. We're here talking about tech between now and, well, whenever this hour decides to end. We have got so much to get through this hour. We're going to be talking about accessible gaming. This is going to interest you two.
What, you're not into gaming at all, Stephen?
Yeah, I like to drive my bus in Grand Theft Auto, but that's not gaming.
No, it is not. You're quite
far from it.
Well, you're into audio gaming, Tim, aren't you?
I am really into audio gaming. I like to play different kinds of immersive 3D audio games or really just anything else. Yeah, I still enjoy playing games. But I grew up in the 80s, so I'm that kind of kid that just, I love to play video games or now audio games.
Well, that's the thing. I think if you had some vision, you probably did at the time, as you say, play those games. But I was never really into that growing up. I don't know. I was more interested in pulling the computers apart than actually playing anything on them. But anyway.
Destructive.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Also, we're going to be talking about GDPR. I'll try and stay awake for that one. Yes, GDPR, it's the only thing that's been filling my inbox over the last week. It is just so irritating, but we'll talk about it. And we'll keep an eye on your emails. Lots and lots, and I mean lots of your emails. But no Chris this week, guys.
Oh, no, what are we going to do without Chris?
I don't know. I'm going to have to read them.
Here comes the headaches.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, thanks, Chris. Right, Tech Talk. Let's get it underway, shall we? Welcome to the show. Yes, we're here for the hour and we're talking about technology as we do. Lovely to have your company again. Wish I could say the same for Tim and Sean. Hello, guys. We've got so much...
Not even answering that.
Right, we've got lots to get through. But before we do, I just want to say fitness, guys. How are we getting on with our fitness these days? Are we? Because we seem to all have fitness devices, but are any of us actually bothering with it?
I'm right on top of it at the moment. I just found my Fitbit charger. So, you know, That's my first step. Next step is actually doing something, some exercise, but my Fitbit is on my wrist, so tiny steps. I'm making moves.
Hang on. So you've found the charger and you've charged up.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, second step. We're nearly there.
As far as you've been putting it on his wrist, that's very impressive. That must have been a lot of hard work.
That's three steps.
Wow.
Yeah, three
that's
steps.
A lot of calories burned. No, I've actually been doing well since you brought it up in the past month or so. I've lost about 30 pounds.
Oof. That's quite a lot of money.
What's that in real terms? I have no idea.
We'll say, what is that in stone?
40, yeah, that's two and a bit stone. That's not bad. Well done.
How did you work that out?
I want an independent adjudicator
in here. That doesn't...
I know, I'm probably wrong. Please email if I am wrong.
Yeah, congratulations. You've lost 40 stone, Tim. That's absolutely amazing. So how are you doing it? Are you just out for walking or what are you doing?
Doing a little bit of exercise, walking. I've cut out soft drinks, so I don't drink Coca-Cola as much as I used to.
Soft drinks aren't available.
Yeah, well, right. But I'm just cutting out a lot of those things that I shouldn't be eating that I enjoy so much.
Oh, that's just disgusting.
So life's miserable at the moment then, too.
Well, but I don't deprive myself. I'm still having things once in a while.
Sounds terrible.
Yes.
Anyway, well done. Keep it up.
Yeah, well done. We're all behind you on that one, but not in the queue, obviously, for whatever you're eating. So the reason I brought this up is, of course, because I have a hilarious anecdote all about me. And
of course,
essentially, this one is about my Apple Watch, which I've got to say, this makes me laugh ridiculously. I've got the Apple Watch, but I also have on my other wrist a Fitbit, the Fitbit Flex 2. And the reason I do this is because my Apple Watch and my Fitbit both seem to record very different step counts. And that's kind of how I tend to work on it these days. So I look at my step count on my Fitbit, and I'm maybe working out on average about 6,000 steps a day, which isn't great, but it's something to work up from, which isn't too bad, arguably. But then I have a pretty sedentary job. I tend to sit at a desk a lot of the time. I don't move around enough. So I need a treadmill with a desk on it. That would be, well, hell, but it'd be, you know, I suppose a start. My watch maybe registers about 2,000 steps a day. And I was thinking, how is that possible? And the only thing I can think of, my Apple Watch is on my left wrist, which is the same hand I use my cane with.
Ah.
And when you're walking, obviously the cane's swinging back and forward, left and right. The hand isn't moving. And I wonder if the movement of the arm is what is crucial in picking up the step count.
It is, yes.
I would have thought so.
So I'm kind of stuffed on that one because I don't want to, and I haven't really thought about wearing my Apple Watch on my right wrist because it's not natural for me. So, so I now wear two fitness devices. Anyway, I just thought I'd bring it up because it seems it might be a good point. If anyone is noticing out there that they are not getting steps or, you know, maybe going for a walk with friends, and your step count isn't anywhere near their level of step count, then maybe it's because of that.
It is a really good point, Stephen, because I've noticed if I do sighted guide with somebody and I'm holding their elbow or their arm and I check my step count, sometimes I'll have very little or no step count because my arm was totally stationary as I was walking with them. So yeah, you absolutely have to be using your arm and waving it back and forth to get that step count to work.
That's interesting. So you get the same, so it's the same thing happens to you. Right, okay.
Yep.
Well, I just wanted to bring it up because, I mean, you know, all joking aside, if you are trying to build up your steps, it doesn't give you much confidence when you get home after a very long walk and you think, oh, I've only done 100 steps. Right, how does that work? So, no, it's maybe something to bear in mind, or even just move it to the other wrist and do what I don't do. Anyway, I thought we'd talk this week about accessible gaming because I know it's a topic you two enjoy discussing, and it's something I've got an interest in. I must say the audio games are more my thing. I haven't played many of them yet, but it's something I'm getting into. But this week I was very fortunate to bump into a guy in the office who is a volunteer for RNIB. He is based in Glasgow in Scotland, so he came into the office where our radio station is, and he was doing his volunteering and doing all the volunteering-y things, and it was all very exciting. And we got to talking, and I found out that he was a massive games fan. And not only was he a massive games fan and visually impaired at the same time, how amazing is that? We also learned that he was instrumental in setting up what's called an audio game jam. And we'll find out what that is in a moment, if you don't know, because I certainly didn't. But it's actually a really useful way of companies learning how accessibility is important in games. Anyway, with us now to tell us about all this is James Kyle. James, good to have you here.
Hey, you're welcome.
Now, Little Birdie tells me that you are a big fan of accessible games.
Yeah. It's something I've been sort of doing a lot of, looking into a lot over the past couple of years. And, you know, it's something that really interests me as someone with sight loss. It's, you know, knowing that a game has accessibility options that will make it easier for me to play is definitely something that I wanted to know more about.
Okay, so guys, the reason I brought James in is because of this very topic. And I know you guys are probably more into your games than I am. But James, I suppose we have to ask this question because it's important when you're visually impaired, it's important you get your sight loss out on the table and show everyone what it is. So tell us, what's your eye condition like?
Well, it's similar to macular degeneration. So I don't have a great deal of detail around about my focal point. On top of that, I've got a little bit of like double vision and colour blindness as well. As
always
my,
brings its friends,
yeah,
doesn't it?
As well as, you know, just my regular sort of short-sightedness as well that I've had since before any of the sort of more complex sight loss sort of kicked in.
So that's amazing. So you got that. And what age are you?
35.
It's quite young to get a condition like that, is it not?
It is, yeah. And they've been looking into it for a long time. It eventually went to a geneticist after my little brother developed it. Pretty much exactly the same symptoms that I did at roughly the same age as well. So since about 13, both myself and my brother have had these macular degeneration like symptoms.
Right.
And the same sort of like similar colour blindness as well. You know, it's not very severe, the colour blindness, but yellows and greens are a little bit, you know, too similar for in a lot of cases. And yeah, it's kind of just like, you know, getting it at 13 and maybe not having the glasses that I should have had it when I was like going through school and all that, it just kind of seemed like normal to me until I was like much, much older. And then I went, oh, okay, I've got great glasses, but I still can't see. So yeah, that's when they started to figure it out. And then when my brother got it, they went, okay, this is maybe, you know, most likely genetic. So they managed to sort of pin it down a little bit there.
Right, okay. And that obviously creates problems when you're trying to play games, which is something I know you enjoy. Now, Sean and Tim are, as I said, more the kind of game people than me. I mean, to me, accessible games, I play Grand Theft Auto. I've bored these two with this story so many times. But I play Grand Theft Auto. Yeah, I know. I've played this game only so I can drive the bus. That's the only thing I have an interest in, is driving the bus. And that's what I am good at. That's the only thing. But I can't play any of the missions because I get shot within 3 seconds. Because I don't see any of the people running about with the guns. So, you know, I just hope that I can get through it, you know, if a shootout starts. It's unlikely that I'm going to survive. But you're into them. So what kind of games do you play?
I play a lot of fighting games. I quite like strategy games as well. Anything that's turn-based, I'm probably quite into. So, you know, I've quite enjoyed things like Advance Wars or Civilization on PC in the past. But, you know, in a lot of cases, when I'm playing games, my girlfriend is more games daft than I am.
Right.
So she's often encouraging me to play games that I wouldn't normally try. And in a lot of cases, she'll like maybe guide me through parts of it, as was the case in things like the Dark Souls series and the sort of spin-off, sort of similar game Bloodborne, where she'd already played through it, so she knew the game inside out, where she'd be going and what she'd be doing, and just kind of like helped me sort of figure out how to play it and, you know, read all the menus for me and tell me what I should be, you know, spending my character's ability points on and things like that. So, you know, having someone there is a big help as well.
That's something we don't have, guys, is it? I mean, I don't know, Tim, you've got Jennifer who could maybe guide you through some of it, but would you play games like that?
I would like to play games like that, and I have. I don't know that Jennifer would necessarily guide me through them because she is not a gamer at all. She's not into games whatsoever. But I have tried to play games like that, and it's not always easy, especially the mainstream games. You have to be able to really know what's going on with the sounds and what's going on screen and have somebody maybe walk you through it. James, to that point, when you do a more mainstream game, not maybe a specific audio game designed for the blind, when you're playing a mainstream game like that, do you find it easier to put on headphones or do you just listen through it through speakers? What is an easier way or best way for you to play that?
Generally, I almost exclusively use headphones when I'm playing alone. Certainly, if I'm playing a game on the sort of big living room television, because normally I would play games at my desk, where I would, you know, on my computer, where I would be probably doing, you know, my regular sort of day-to-day work as well. So at my desk it would be headphones all the time, but, you know, that's on the rare occasions where I'm playing with my girlfriend on the big living room TV, then I'll maybe not wear headphones. I find headphones really do help, though. They make a big difference to how I can sort of figure out what's actually going on in the game.
Now, James, I grew up with games as well, you know, Way the Exploding Fist on the Commodore 64, Doom, Quake, Wolfenstein, all that stuff. And as my eyesight went, you know, less and less, I really missed playing those games. And there was some work. I always remember the accessible Doom port that someone did, where it was just purely audible. When something was in front of you, you'd get a solid tone. Now, these are, you know, I commend them, and I should be there saying, yes, let's make everything accessible, but I can't help thinking that some things just lose something when they're tried to make accessible like that, especially mainstream games. Trying to think of Grand Theft Auto as an accessible game, I just don't really see how it can be done.
Yeah, I mean, there's part of the confusion, I think, with when you talk about accessible gaming to people that really follow games, really follow mainstream games that maybe don't have any kind of disability in any way. They often associate the term with games being dumbed down, you know, to make the game more accessible to like your grandparents or, you know, people that don't normally play games, whereas really the term accessibility is mostly used within sort of game development as, you know, when you're talking about making the game more easily playable or at all playable to people who have some sort of maybe recognized disability or you know, some sort of physical or even like physical or mental barrier to playing the game. So yeah, it's not necessarily I see what you mean when you say, like, you know, you would lose something perhaps.
It changes the whole feel of the game for me.
Yeah,
it's no longer, you know, in that example, it's no longer Doom, it's another game.
Yeah, yeah. But at the same time, it's not necessarily the case. It really does just depend on the game that you're trying to adapt. So, like, for example, Electronic Arts, the publisher that makes all the sports games and all the Star Wars games these days, along with their own sort of properties, they've got an accessibility team. Their accessibility team has been working really hard to make things like the John Madden American football games accessible to blind players. And they've made really great steps in making those games like almost fully playable without sight. So there is a lot of work being done. And in the case of like Madden, like so much of it, what the person experiences when they're playing it can be sort of delivered both visually but also through the audio.
Yeah.
Through the in-game commentary from the commentators and from the sounds on the field and through the rumble through the controller as well. So it's not always just down to the audio too.
Yeah. I'm sort of hoping, you know, like when the smartphones came out, touchscreen, and I was saying, how could these ever be accessible? I'm sort of hoping there's going to come along a game and I'm going to think, that's how you do it. You know, that's what I'm waiting for. And maybe it's out already and I've missed it.
Yeah, I mean, I find myself having those moments, you know, on a fairly regular basis now when I see, if I was to look at EA's John Madden, their Madden football games a couple of years ago, I would have looked at that and thought, no way. You need to have like 20/20 vision to just follow everything that's going on the field here.
Yeah.
And what they'd done was they realised that there was in almost like every situation, you're essentially doing the same things, and so many of the players are AI controlled that although there is an awful lot going on, if you are aware of what your player is doing, then you can play a competitive game against the computer and against, you know, your average sighted player too. They are figuring out ways to make it work. And while there may be some sort of little parts of the immersive experience lost along the way, you know, they're getting blind gamers so much of the way there. It's really quite encouraging.
Yeah, no, it definitely sounds it. That was another thing as well, because I think about when I think of gaming, you know, obviously my kids have got consoles, and thinking back, the only real console I found I could play with other people with was the Nintendo Wii. You know, I think we've all played the bowling game on there and a bit of the tennis. I mean, you know, you got audible.
Nearly smashed the TV.
Exactly, hitting the kids around the head with it by accident. That's what I say when they're winning. But, you know, you got audible cues in there. You can hear the ball bouncing towards you and things like that. And that really was quite good. I enjoyed that. The actual consoles themselves, though, they're becoming more accessible. Things with like the Xbox and the PlayStation.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, certainly the Xbox has been doing, like, they're taking their narrator. Microsoft are taking the narrator features from Windows 10, and they're bringing those onto Xbox. It's not something I've actually been able to try personally yet, but from the sounds of things, it seems like it could go a long way to making that system more, you know, far more accessible than, you know, most other systems on the market.
Yeah, but the problem is that, you know, like the PlayStation 4 has got the option to increase the text size, which is one thing, and that's great, but it still doesn't tell me if the lights are red or green when I'm driving my bus in Grand Theft Auto.
You and that bus.
I love this bus.
Well, that's it. I mean, you touched on a good point there, because while you can embed these systems, you can embed these features at a system level, you still have to rely on developers to then make use of those in the games, and that's, you know, but part of the drive towards accessibility is just to encourage developers to, on the one hand, you know, realize that these systems are there, and then also to actually make use of them.
And that's not unique to gaming. I mean, we see that on, we talk about the Amazon Fire Stick, and we say how wonderfully accessible to some degree the operating system is on the Fire Stick, except when you try and use an app on it and it's not accessible. So it's not unique to that.
Yeah, I think that's right, Stephen, that accessibility isn't just unique to gaming as it is at this point. And I think it's a good point to make that mainstream games are trying, like James was talking about with Microsoft and bringing their Raider there and EA Sports and what they've done with their line of games. James, to that point then, because mainstream games are just now beginning to add accessibility, that almost takes us back to the more specifically designed for us type of games, audio only games. Do you think those have become better over the years? Sean was talking about Shades of Doom for many, many years ago. The progression of audio only games has really gotten better and more immersive and more, I don't know, more playable. Don't you think so?
I think so. And I feel like a big part of that is down to the access that people with sight loss have now to game development tools. It's much easier for people with sight loss to develop their own games and engage with other people who are, you know, blind or partially sighted to talk about game development and share their projects and their ideas and find out what works and what doesn't work and really sort of get a lot closer to sort of standardizing maybe the way that these games are made, so that it's far more easy for people who are, you know, have sight loss and want to play games that are designed just for or primarily for people who are blind to, you know, jump in and not have to relearn all their inputs and all their, you know, how each game is played. It's come in some way.
Now, the reason I wanted you in the studio today, James, was because you're a nice guy, first of all. That's a good reason. But also, I thought it'd be good to talk about the Audio Game Jam, because this was something you did last year, and I know this year you're going to do it again. October time, isn't it?
Yeah, October 12th to 21st.
So what is Audio Game Jam first?
First of all, Audio Game Jam is a game jam, so...
What does that mean? Yeah. I know what jam is.
I know what
games are.
I very often sort of tell people it's a game jam and I get blank stares. So yeah, the term game jam sort of draws its definition, draws its meaning from the sort of like an audio jam session for a band. So it's like you get game developers all together, and they work to make games in a very short period of time, based around a general theme. So in the case of audio game jam, that theme would be that the game should be playable without sight. And this is the third year that we're running it. Hopefully we'll see more, you know, more accessible games than we did in previous years, and hopefully more sort of involvement from the sort of broader game development community as well.
So it kind of furthers a cause.
Yeah. I initially started it as a fundraising thing for RNIB. I had the idea that I could sort of start this event and people would make games and share them around, and people would donate to the RNIB through the Audio Game Jam Just Giving page. Mm-hmm. And that didn't necessarily pan out the way I thought it would, but at the same time, while that didn't take off, the event itself did still get a lot of attention, and it's probably more something that I'm focusing on now as something to really sort of push the idea that, you know, gaming accessibility and gaming is important, and to encourage game developers to like be aware that blind people are out there, they want to play games, and it'd be really great if they could implement the features to or design their games in a way that makes them playable to people with sight loss.
Okay. When is it happening then? I mentioned October, but you got dates?
Yeah, it's October 12th to the 21st, and it's all going to be on, it's all done online. It's all hosted by a website called Game Jolt, which is a very large independent game hosting website.
How do you spell that?
It's GameJolt.com.
Okay.
Although the Audio Game Jam website is www.audiogamejam.org, and you can find links there to the Game Jolt page that's hosting this year's event and the previous two years' events as well. On those pages, you'll be able to find all the games that have been submitted to download and play for free.
Excellent. Well, I wish you all the best for it. We'll get you back in when it's happening. Nothing to do with Space Jam, is it? Because I've seen that movie. It's nothing like that, no?
It is not, no.
Right, okay, just clarifying.
Showing our age.
Is that showing age? Oh, goodness. James, thank you so much for coming in. It's been great talking to you.
No worries. Glad to be here.
Well, I quite enjoyed that conversation. Thank you to James for coming in. Right, let's talk about some of the news stories. Oh, we need the jingle. Right, play the jingle.
News from the internet.
Ah, there we go. I feel better.
That feels better now.
Doesn't
it? When there's no jingles, I get scared.
Makes you feel much more complete when there's a jingle, yeah.
Correct, that's right.
Yeah, the wheels just about stay on the wagon on this thing. So, yeah, if the jingles weren't there, that would assume that at least one of the wheels had fallen off, or maybe several. Right, so the news of the week is GDPR. Now, we're going to talk a bit more about GDPR in a moment, but all I want to say about it is, for those who don't know what it is, first of all, it's General Data Protection Regulation. Yes, it's as boring as it sounds, but essentially what it does is it stops us getting our inboxes filled up with emails. Although I say that, and I don't know about you, Sean, Tim, I don't think this applies to you in the States, certainly, but for me and Sean.
Oh, yes, it has. Oh, yes.
Oh, has it? Oh, right. Well, that's interesting. I thought it only affected the UK in this case, but okay. But interestingly, any of the emails that you've been getting recently have probably been from companies saying, by the way, we've got your details on file. Do you want us to keep your data, your details on file? And I've just ignored every single email that's come in.
Me too, yeah.
Hoping that they'll just stop sending them and my inbox will be left alone from now on. But that's essentially what GDPR is. We're going to get to it in a minute, though. We've done a bit of a report on it. We thought we'd put together a bit of a handy guide to explain how you are affected by it. But not just you as an individual. Maybe you own a business. Maybe you own a small business or a company. Well, you might want to know yourself how this would affect you. So we've put together a handy guide. Sean, I know there was a story you wanted to pick up on this week, though.
Yeah, that's right. I've been seeing this story doing the rounds and people have been talking about it on forums and everywhere. And it annoys me. Okay, so let me give you the story itself. There's a couple in, I think it's Portland, in America. And the news story, as it's reported, is Amazon Echo device is spying on you. And the facts of the matter is that it was nothing like that at all. They span the story for the spying on you aspect of it. So the story was, a couple were having a conversation in their home. They have a Amazon Echo device. And they were rang by a friend of theirs who said, I've got audio files of your private conversation in your house. And obviously they were shocked and appalled and this is terrible and they didn't know anything about it. But when you look at the facts, what actually happened was, with the Amazon's calling or send a message feature, when they were having the conversation, somehow they triggered the send a message feature and the Amazon device responded with, shall I send it to whoever the contact was in their contacts list? And again, throughout their conversation, somehow it heard, yes, send this message. And it sent a recording of their conversation to one of their contacts. And everyone is saying, this is terrible. This is Amazon spying on you. I knew they were doing this. And of course it isn't. It's totally misreporting the facts. The facts are that you've got a device in your house that's got this capability to call people or send audio clips to people. And it was triggered by them. Now, they're saying they didn't hear any of the device's responses. They have no idea how it happened. Amazon are saying, well, we've got your Amazon history here. Because if you go into your app, you've got a full history of what it heard. You know, you've got a voice recording of you saying whatever command it heard and its responses to that. So they know exactly what was said, what it heard and what it picked up. But this couple in America are saying, no, we didn't say anything. We didn't hear anything. But my point is that this is so spun to get the, oh no, conspiracy theory. This company is listening to, aren't big companies bad? And it just isn't the facts. You've got to have some personal responsibility if you've got a device like this. If you want to totally take away the risk of this, then turn off the calling feature. You know, you enabled it. You've got to have some responsibility for it. Look, I'm not saying Amazon are totally not to blame on this. They should have more of a confirmation if you're going to call someone. You know, when you make a voice purchase, you've got to enter a four-digit PIN, or you've got to speak it, I should say. And I think they should have the same sort of thing for calling people, because there's adverts over here in the UK where it says, Lady A, call Mum. And a few times, mine's nearly done it, I've called it. So there does need to be some sort of two-step verification, I think, for calling features. But still, this story that's doing the rounds, I just think it's totally wrong. It's not true. When you actually read the facts of it, basically, they butt-dialed someone. That's all it comes down to. They accidentally called someone, and now they're screaming, privacy, privacy. And I just, personal responsibility.
Yeah, when I saw an article about this, Sean, I really agree with you that the headline itself was definitely clickbait. I mean, this is the definition of clickbait, because
exactly.
They make it sound like it's so horrible, and then Amazon's spying on you. And then you read the story, and it's like, well, wait a minute. This is possible that they did this. And what made it worse, you were describing how they say, well, we didn't realize that it was making the call. We didn't hear it. We didn't hear the Echo say anything. But then they go on to say, well, but we were also in the middle of this big discussion about what we were doing to our house and this and that. And, well, who's going to really hear it talking to us when we're having this big conversation? So maybe it said something and we just didn't hear it because we were engrossed in our conversation. It's like, wait a minute. Did you not hear anything? Or is it possible you just didn't hear it because you were so into your conversation? So that really didn't lend any more credibility to the situation and this couple, because like you said, Amazon's history said that they actually triggered all this. The Echo itself apparently was saying things to them and they just didn't pay attention or didn't hear it. So yeah, I agree with you to the point that there might be something else that Amazon could do, although it does ask you, do you want to make this call, or is this what you want to do? The only next step would be to do some sort of code or something like you said, but it does verify things like that and confirm them before you do it. So yeah, I think it was just a matter of this couple just not paying attention, which maybe they didn't have it turned up very loud. I don't know, but yeah, it's kind of a
There is that possibility as well. They just had the volume turned down. Now, I don't want it to sound like I'm blaming this couple, because I think it's more the people, the media outlets that are reporting the story. As you said, it's so clickbaity. It's all spying and privacy, and they're listening into you. And that's not what
happened. Right, Donald Trump, your fake news. Right. Right. Well, listen, just to give Amazon a say in this, they say that an unlikely string of events prompted one of the devices to record the family's private conversation and send it to an acquaintance. The internet giant says the personal assistant misheard words and interpreted them as commands. Now, I just want to bring in another voice to this. Although the conversation itself is nothing more juicy than about hardwood floors, law expert Professor Ryan Callow says this will still worry users.
It only reinforces people's fears and concerns that when they're in their home and there are connected devices, that they're not truly alone. I think one of the big problems with this technology is that it has the possibility of compromising feelings of solitude.
Now, that's interesting, because it comes to, a problem that comes up with all of this, which is that people don't fully understand this technology yet. I think that's ultimately the problem here. We get it, we get into this stuff and we love it, but people out there, I think, don't always get what this technology can do. I think that, we made the joke a few weeks ago on the show about, remember the days when you would buy a video recorder and you'd get an 800-page manual that went along with it, and it was crazy. But actually, the one thing about that manual was that if you couldn't find something out about the machine, you would go to the manual and find it out.
Yeah.
These days, there is no manual, there's nothing. You buy an Amazon Echo, if it's a Dot, for example, or even the bigger one, you open it up and it's there with a tiny bit of paper, which, from what they've told me, is essentially just a very quick start of how to plug it in and turn it on and maybe connect it to your Wi-Fi. And that's it.
Yeah.
And I think that in some respects creates a problem, because people maybe hear about these features, maybe they don't, and then suddenly they are opened up to this world that they don't fully understand. And I think that is a bigger concern for me than a news agency and it's clickbait.
Well, that is an issue. I recently got the Nest thermostat, and the same sort of thing. A sheet of paper in it. I have no idea how this thing works. I just shout at it. and it seems to do whatever I want it to do. But I have no idea. The manual thing is a good point. We should be in a better place now than we've ever been before, you know, with accessibility to these instructions as well. But people just love the conspiracy theories around this big business listening in and privacy. Of course, you know, look, we've had the Facebook issue recently, and there are issues to talk about. But I think there's things in reality, you know, that need sorting rather than making things up. Amazon and Google have got so much information anyway about us that we give willingly, directly and indirectly, for our purchases and searches, that they've no need to listen to 24/7 of me talking about Carnation Street and shifting through that to find out what I want and what I'm having for my pudding after dinner. It makes no sense. It's just a conspiracy theory.
I think, you know, there are real concerns that I have around people's knowledge of this technology and what its capabilities are. I think oftentimes what happens is you get family members who go out and buy this technology for their family members, and they say, oh, look, Granny, this is great. Look, it'll tell you the weather. And suddenly she's calling someone in Spain and she's having this conversation. Why is this thing talking? And, you know, and the same token, this could happen with a phone. You know, I mean, you could pick up a phone and dial their own number and end up having a conversation with someone. You know, there are different methods to this. I think it is about personal responsibility. I agree with you. But I also think we can be frightened of the unknown, which is what the professor there was suggesting. We're a bit frightened of the unknown at the moment. And people don't always understand this technology, which can create fear with people, especially those who live alone. And I find that quite an interesting side to this debate. Tell us your thoughts on it. What do you think? techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Good story, Sean. Well done
Thank
for
you.
Bringing that one up. That's the first time I've ever had to congratulate you for doing something in this programme. Well done. No passive aggressiveness in that at all.
No.
Right. I've also got WWDC coming up soon.
Yay.
Are we all excited?
I'm so excited. I couldn't wait for you to ask if I was excited. That's how excited I am. You know, iOS 12, I just can't wait. Of course, it's probably going to be boring and nothing, but still, I'm going to get my pizza and watch the whole thing. I love it.
Yeah, Sean, I agree with you. I'm always excited about WWDC. I'm at a point now where I want to get the new phone. After last year's phones, I skipped them. I'm eager to maybe get this year's phone. And I'm currently using a Series 1 Apple Watch, and I am all in on getting the Series 4 Apple Watch this
boo.
Year. I cannot
boo.
Wait. I'm looking forward to... Why the boo? It's going to be so great.
Oh, no. I'm booing the Series 1. I mean, come on.
Oh, the Series 1. Well, I've just been waiting for the right one to come along, and I think Series 4 is going to be it. And like Sean said, iOS 12, because they claim, the rumor is that they're really working on the iOS side of things. Not going to be a lot of new features, just a lot of security updates and maybe even some Siri updates. Hopefully, we'll cross our fingers. So if they're really going to dive in and take care of the iOS side along with the new phones and the new watch, this is going to be a fun one to watch.
Yeah, it's the iPad I have the most interest in, bizarrely, because my iPad is good and it's okay. I've got the iPad Pro at the moment, the 10.5, but I have a thing about buying a new iPad, and I actually don't know why because I barely use it, but I have a thing about buying this new iPad because if it's got the Face ID and it's got all the other things and the nice new screen, I think it'd be quite nice. I mean, can you imagine if it does come out with an OLED screen? That would be beautiful.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen, but you never know. You never know. It could be a one more thing. I was going to mention that. You know, you say you love the iPads, but you never use them. You just collect them.
Well, I go through phases with my iPad, and the reason being, and I bought a keyboard for mine, which is called the Bridge Keyboard, BRYDGE, and I'd read a lot about this keyboard, and the reason I liked it was because the way that the iPad sits in it, it kind of, there's two little clips at the back of the keyboard where the iPad slides into, and then when it's sitting, it looks like an iPad, it looks like a laptop actually, and you can adjust the screen. That's one thing you can't do with the Apple one.
Yeah.
However, two things about this keyboard. One, it's Bluetooth, and two, it requires its own charging. Now, the problem with that is that you have to charge up the keyboard separately from the iPad using a micro USB. I mean, that's two chargers you've got to carry around for one device. I mean, that is ridiculous. And the Bluetooth on it wasn't great. I don't know what was wrong with it, but a lot of keys just were being missed. I thought it was due to VoiceOver, but I turned off every setting I could think of that would hopefully mean it would pick up what was being typed. Because it wasn't so much that it wasn't speaking as it was typing. It just wasn't even typing anything.
Mm.
So That's a bit of a problem, obviously. So you try
keyboard,
to,
yes.
Yeah. Typing away merrily and nothing's happening was very annoying. So I decided to go into an Apple store and try out an Apple keyboard, the Apple iPad Pro keyboard. And, well, I got no problems at all with it. So I decided to get that. And for that reason, I've started using my iPad again. And it's actually quite good. I do like it. I just find it a bit more fiddly than the iPhone because, obviously, a lot of times you have... The way the iPad sits in these keyboards, it sits landscape, which means that you get a lot of columns with it that you've got to navigate around. But other than that, you know, once you get used to that, it's actually okay. Not as good as the Mac, certainly for voiceover, and not as easy as the iPhone, but you know, far better for productivity and getting things done, I think. So not bad at all. But that's why I'm quite keen to see what they bring out next.
Well, I'm sure the Apple keyboard works fantastically, but it's about £1,000, is it?
No, it's not £1,000. It's £159, Sean.
Oh, please. Well, that's a bargain. What was I thinking?
For a keyboard, yeah. But you know what? What I love about it, it charges itself. I love that feature. It uses a little smart connector that's in the iPad, and it keeps charging all day long. No need for a separate charger. Beautiful. Anyway,
as long as it works.
Yeah. Right, okay. Well, before we move on to the emails today, everybody seems to be talking about GDPR, don't they? But what is it and how will it affect all of us? Well, we thought here at Tech Talk we'd create a handy guide for you. Everywhere you go these days, everyone is talking about one thing.
Brexit, Brexit, Brexit.
Brexit!
Brexit, Brexit!
Brexit, 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 Brexit!
Brexit.
But now, there's something else for us to talk about.
GDPR.
GDPR. GDPR.
GDPR.
GDPR.
But just like Brexit, no one really knows what it really means.
I totally agree, and that's why we decided to create a handy guide to help explain it all. Tim, go for it.
What?
Don't worry, Tim, we will tackle it as a team. And in that spirit, I'll go first with perhaps the most obvious question people have, and that is, what is GDPR? Well, firstly, GDPR is an acronym for General Data Protection Regulation. This is a new EU regulation that came into force on the 25th of May in the UK and brings our data protection laws into line with the rest of the European Union. It will affect everyone, no matter whether you own and run a business or just a humble consumer on the high street. GDPR will affect you. Essentially, its purpose is to give you better control over what businesses and organisations can do with your data. Prior to the introduction of the law, there was the 1998 Data Protection Act. This has been superseded by this new law, and with it comes some serious implications if it's not followed. But more on that later.
But who does this new law actually apply to? Well, officially, controllers and processors of data, which covers just about every organisation out there, as most organisations will handle people's personal data at some point. Whether it's the data of customers, suppliers, the public or staff, if you're a business and wondering how you can comply, well, there's lots of resources online to help. But essentially, you need to know one thing. If you're collecting people's data as part of your business practice, you must always ask for their explicit and informed consent to do so, and do it in a timely, clear, and obvious way, so they fully understand what data you're collecting, why, and what you intend to do with it. You can no longer assume that people are giving their consent about their data, which is great news for us as consumers, as it means we can't be tricked into sharing our data anymore. For example, those pre-ticked tick boxes on websites.
But here's the really important bit. There is no room for complacency or claiming that you just don't know the rules, as that just won't cut the mustard in the courts. Penalties are severe for mishandling people's data, and the responsibility is on everyone in your business or organization, from the boss to the janitor. The highest financial penalty that can be handed down is £17.8 million, and in some cases, there could be grounds for imprisonment.
But we're leaving the EU, so can't we just play along till Brexit happens?
It's a fair question, Sean, but the answer is no. While the UK is indeed working towards leaving the EU, the GDPR will take effect before the legal and practical consequences of leaving the EU do. For the time being, all UK organisations must comply. if and when we do leave the EU, we may not necessarily drop this piece of legislation. In fact, we will likely continue to follow GDPR or a legislation similar long after we have left, simply because it will make things a whole lot easier when transacting business with other EU countries.
Now, if you're listening to all of this and quietly panicking, don't worry. There's lots of advice and guidance. The ICO is the UK's authority on the subject, and if you read their advice, in particular, follow the 12 steps they highlight on their website, your organization will be on the right track. Search for ICO online.
Interesting. Well, hopefully that helps you a little bit understanding GDPR. Right, shall we turn to some emails, guys?
Why not? I love the emails.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
Yes, we do love an email here on the show. Yes, time to get to them. Now, I mentioned earlier, Chris is not here, which is a bit annoying because it means I have to read them. But thankfully, one thing Chris did do before he left, and I should say he's actually away having a child, not him himself, but his wife is having a child. So I just want to say all the best to Chris, and I hope he, wife, and child are all good. Although I don't actually think they're married, so, you know. He, girlfriend and child. I don't want to get into this. Right.
Good luck, Chris.
Good luck, Chris.
Right. Before we move on to some of the emails we've had most recently, Chris did record a couple of emails we didn't get to last week. So we thought we'd just play them in because that'll give my eyes a little bit of a rest. That'll give me time to get my drops in. So we'll kick off with one from Mark that Chris recorded for us.
Hi, all. A reply to the lady who had a glitch with the eBay app. I've had exactly the same problem with the app, which is otherwise a very accessible piece of kit. All I can do to get around the problem is to turn off VoiceOver and use screen magnification to tick the button in question. Whilst this is not a great way to sidestep the issue, it does at least mean you can complete the transaction. It did make me wonder if the RNIB has a service or person who is charged with contacting the respective companies to relate these specific problems to. It would be far better coming from such a well-recognised institution rather than a few isolated users. There's a PS. FlickType is a fantastic app, but works best if you can already touch type, so know where the keys are already situated. ID, spelled E-Y-E-D, is a worthy competitor to Seeing AI, which can be very hit and miss. If there was a charge, I think I would have asked for my money back. However, as it is free, I await more updates. And a PPS, Stephen, where is Claire? We all miss her. That's regards from Mark.
Oh, right. Well, we'll get to that question in just a minute then, Mark. But let's talk about some of the other things that Mark brought up there. eBay, yes, that's a bit of an ongoing issue. It seems crazy that there are all these different ways to do it instead of just being able to purchase in the app itself. That seems crazy to me.
It's not a, you know, there's a lot of apps that have this issue where you can quite happily go through and get nearly to the end, but when you're in the checkout, either the Pay Now button's not there or a tip box isn't accessible, and it's so frustrating.
Other things that Mark brought up there, of course, FlickType is actually a really good point. You know, if you touch type, you will get on much better with this app than you would not being able to touch type. Would you agree with that, Sean?
Oh, yeah. You need to know whereabouts the letters are going to be located. So, you know, if you don't know touch typing, then it probably isn't much faster than using the standard on-screen keyboard anyway. So, yeah, that's true.
And Mark says, Tim, that he would ask for his money back if he got the ID app, but otherwise he's keeping it. What do you think of that?
I think that's a pretty fair assessment of ID because it is good for what it does. But if I had to pay more than just even the tiniest bit of money to it, yeah, I don't know that you're getting your full money's worth for it if that was the case. But I don't know. It doesn't do a too bad of a job, though. I think it's okay.
I think he was talking about Seeing AI.
Oh,
there.
I see. Right.
Even though it's free, he would if it was a charge, he would want his money back because he says it's hit and miss, which a lot of people say. I've never had a problem with Seeing AI, so it's difficult.
Neither have I.
A few have, though.
I've actually gone on record to say I would pay for Seeing AI. I would actually pay a little bit of money for it because it's been so helpful for me. So, yeah, I wonder why some people seem to not be able to get along with it.
Hashtag controversial. Right, okay. Now, speaking of Claire Porter, well, she has been in touch with us, Mark.
And an email from Claire Potter. Hi, Stephen. Hope you are all well. I had a listen to Tech Talk yesterday and heard about a listener having trouble checking out with the eBay app. I do apologise that I cannot remember their name, but I wanted to share my solution for the problem, as I too found this very frustrating when I began to use the app. In order to independently do a full eBay shop, I search for and add items to my basket using the app. What I then do is use Safari on my iPhone to log into my account on the eBay website, where I find my basket and check out. This is fully accessible and I can tick the box, no problem. The other option is to use a PC with a screen reader, but that is a lot slower. I hope this helps and keep up the good work, especially the interview with Dolphin, who I always think of very highly. From Claire.
Thanks, Claire. Lovely to hear from you.
Oh, she's been gone too long. Come back, Claire. Whatever Stephen did, he's sorry.
He is. He should be very sorry. Me. We miss you, Claire. She makes a really good point there, though, that if you can't access the purchasing ability from the app, you can go to Safari or some other browser to do it. But honestly, that shouldn't be necessary. And I'm wondering, since we do hear about this so often with different apps where there's a purchasing issue, I wonder if it's maybe not as much as the apps is something to do with the way they're programmed with VoiceOver, because I know that people obviously that don't use VoiceOver are able to get in. And as the previous email from Mark said, you know, he just uses the screen magnification zoom and is able to use it. So it's obviously some sort of access with VoiceOver issue. So I wonder if it's something in the programming, not as much as maybe the apps themselves. I don't know. This is something we have to maybe look into.
Well, what's interesting is I remember a few weeks ago we had an issue with the Virgin Trains app. I know Sean had mentioned it because he and I had been trying to buy a train ticket and it wasn't working very well. And then we got a listener, I think it might have been Gordon, who got in touch and said, try the rotor turn to, what was that again? Was it punctuation?
Punctuation.
And did that work for you? Did you ever try it? I bet you didn't.
Of course I thought about trying it. No, I totally forgot about it. An update has just come through for that app, actually. So I will try it. I will let you know next week.
I can't wait to next week. It's always next week with Sean, isn't it, Tim? Always next week. Always coming.
He's always thinking ahead.
He is always thinking
ahead. Yes, correct. Thank you, Tim.
That is a wonderfully diplomatic way of saying he hasn't done anything. Right. So I just want to pick up a couple more emails from you. There are so many to get through. I think next week we'll kick off with the emails like we did before, just to sort of get through some of these, because there are so many emails with lots of really interesting points and tips as well that I want to get people so people can hear. But let's just pick up on a couple. Georgina has been in touch, who says to Riz from last week's show, who came on our Android Anorak, was talking about we were all talking about the two-finger double tap, magic tap, I think we call it, on the iPhone. Well, Georgina says, using a Samsung device and voice assist, a three-finger slide up or down changes granularity. A double-finger double tap acts as it does on iOS to start, stop music and phone calls. I've just paused the playback of Tech Talk by this two-finger action. So hang on, it's a double-finger double tap. So that's the same on iOS and then on Android as well, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
But that's on a Samsung. So, you know, and as Riz said last week, and he was at pains to say, actually, there are different devices with different methods. They're not all the same on Android, but try it out anyway. Two fingers, double tap, and that will work as a pause. And as Georgina says, she's managed to achieve the pausing of Tech Talk. I hope you resumed playback at some point. Happy droiding, says Gina. Rebecca's also been in touch as well and says, I've heard about the SanDisk Connect in the last two episodes of Tech Talk and decided to order one. Uh-oh.
See what you've done.
I always get in trouble here.
You're in trouble now.
I'm costing people money. I'm not as fast a typist in iOS, so I was pleasantly surprised when I found a voice search option on the bottom of the screen in the Amazon shopping app. If you have the Alexa app, Amazon may allow you to import your username and password. I received a notification asking if I wanted to use my existing email address. So far, Amazon's dictation feature works well, almost too well, so much for staying out of debt. I hope those who feel intimidated by Amazon's website find the iOS version easier to use. I think that's probably true.
I use it. It must be every day, the Amazon app on iOS. It's so accessible, works so well. I use the voice search feature, the search feature, we're typing it in by text, and that works really well as well. I love it. But I'm in the same boat as you. I just spend too much money on it.
Well, that's the trick, isn't it? Every time I open the Amazon app, I feel like I'm just going to spend more and more money. But you're right. Whenever I do a voice search or even just the regular search function, it is very accessible. And talking about being able to navigate down a page, at least on iOS, you can navigate by headings with the different search results. And it just goes to the very first, you know, line of the next item in the list. So it works so nicely. And yes, it costs me so much money.
Rebecca also adds a PS. For those of you who have an updated version of JAWS or NVDA, you might want to try the new Firefox. In my opinion, it is well worth the wait. It is faster than the ESR version, and for me, faster than Google Chrome.
Now, I haven't gone back to Firefox since the whole issue with screen readers in Firefox.
No, me neither.
I left it behind, and I'm still on Chrome, so maybe I will give it a try. That's the trouble, though. Once you leave something and you find something else that works for you, you tend to stick with it, don't you?
Well, and coincidentally enough, I had actually been, as they say, in between browsers at the moment because I hadn't really settled on something lately because I have used all of these. And I had read something on NVDA's website where they feel that they really work better with Firefox. And so I went ahead and gave it a try. And I've actually been using Firefox for a couple of weeks now. And it's not bad. It really works well with NVDA, and I get around it pretty well. So, yeah, I think it's a good recommendation.
And just one more email I want to drop in here. There are so many, but I'm cherry-picking a little bit here. But I wanted to mention this one because it follows up on last week. Billy Burrell got in touch again. Remember, Billy got in touch. He was having issues with sound on his Amazon Fire tablet. He says, "Hi guys, thanks for addressing the volume issue on the Kindle Fire tablet that I emailed you about. I had previously tried the settings that Sean suggested, though, when I repeatedly pressed the volume up button, as he also mentioned, a box asking if I wanted to allow increased volume didn't appear on my device. I thought perhaps that it was, or I was missing it, because Voice View wasn't alerting me to the box. But I got some sighted assistance and the box didn't appear. However, as you recommended, I did try some different headphones, the Samsung ones I've previously tried, and the alternative ones worked much better, giving me far greater volume levels for all my media. The ones that worked were, believe it or not, Vivitar Bluetooth headphones, which goes to show that you don't have to spend vast amounts of money to get decent quality sound. Thank you once again. Best regards, Billy Burrell."
Oh, fantastic. As long as something worked, that's the main thing.
Absolutely. Well, that's it for our show this week. Thank you so much for listening. Next week, we'll be talking about WWDC. Of course, Apple's big event kicks off on Monday, June 4th, which means on Tuesday's show, we'll be reacting to it all. Oh, the excitement.
Oh, yes, Stephen, WWDC. I can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll catch you next time. Keep in touch. TechTalk at rnib.org.uk. Thanks for listening. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.